we kind of branched out and said, let's take other people. And kind of our focus was we wanted other families with kids to use this area and fall in love with it so that when it gets threatened by taking it away, there's going to be people that are saying, no, no, that's such a cool area. So it was kind of, that was in our mind too, is to try and create more opportunities for people to see what we have here. You don't have to drive all the way up to Ontario, although that's lots of fun and I love it, but we can do a lot of those things right here too.
Yeah.
So how much of the guiding business you developed was just what you guys wanted to do versus, you know, there's hundreds or thousands of guides that'll take you out on their, you know, 16-foot giant boat and take you out on a big lake all day.
Yeah, you know, I think that's probably our biggest thing. First of all, we knew we really wanted to try and create those moments for people that just make lifelong memories for them, especially families. And you get that, I think, when you're totally immersed in not just the fishing, but you're in the wilderness river, you're going around, you know, you're seeing wildlife, you're getting the sights, the smells, all that makes a big impact. And sometimes it can be, you have an experience that maybe didn't go as planned, but that becomes the experience. And I have all the respect in the world for the guides that, hey, meet me at the boat launch, jump in my boat, we're going to go out on the lake and fish for 8 hours. There's all those, you know, those guys. But we always said, if you go out on the lake and the fish just aren't biting that day and it's hard, you're just out in a boat on the lake with kids, that's challenging. But when you're going down a river and, oh, we got some fast water coming up here and you get it, you know, oh, look at the deer standing in the river, or, you know, an eagle sitting up there.
The kids get restless. You can stop somewhere and let them float down the river for a while.
Yeah, and they catch crayfish. They can do, you know, you can do things that they'll remember. And that's, you know, so that's kind of our thing.
So when was that? When did that start?
About 10 years ago.
Was it that long?
Yeah, 2014, more than that. Yeah, 2014 was when we first started. And another part to this was we had just kind of finished doing the kids, doing all the sports stuff. I coached baseball for lots of years and football and in high school, and our kids were in a lot of sports and music, and it was like we knew what it was like to have to put all that stuff on the calendar first and not take the time to go and do a camping or, you know, fishing or whatever. And then you had that one weekend where it's like, hey, wait, there's nothing happening. Did you really want to pack up all your gear to go up north and get back late on a Sunday night? You got a car full of wet gear and tents and you got your dog, you know, all that stuff.
Because we had done that a lot.
Because we had done that. And we thought,
it's not fun.
So we kind of thought that's a niche, you know, instead of like families who have that situation, you know, come up north instead of going to Noah's Ark, which is a great, you know, great fun weekend, but are you really going to remember that the rest of your life, right? But come up north, we'll take you for a day, we'll haul canoes into a little lake, you can fish, catch lots of fish, we'll even cook them for you, make a campfire, make some s'mores, hike out at the end of the day, and leave all the stuff with us, and you drive away, and you know, that's the stuff that, you know, kids remember. It lights a fire in kids, you know, a lot of times that they remember that and they want to do that again. And we've been fortunate to make some really great relationships.
That's been a big part of it. It's been a lot of fun. We talked about these little girls that have been coming to us since they were 5, 7, and 9. And
now they're driving. And
the little one, the first year, she couldn't really, we were afraid to let her cast in the boat. She might hook somebody. So
John got a Barbie fishing pole.
Yeah, John got out this big bunch of rubber frogs, and he said, well, Janie, pick out one of these. And so she's looking, and she picks out this red sparkly one, which up until then, I don't think we ever used.
No.
And he puts it on and digs the hook right into the rubber, so there's no way she can hurt anybody. And she's casting, and doesn't a muskie come and grab it
right at the boat side.
She's got
this fish on it. It wasn't letting go. And I mean, I knew it was a matter of a time before it would just break the line because the frog was gone. And she just, you know, she talks about that.
They talk about every time they come back and we tell the Janie story. And then she didn't want to fish anymore. She put her pole down and John said, Janie, why aren't you fishing? I don't want that big muskie to get my pole.
And we just had one this year. I had a young man who was a junior in high school, a very quiet kid, and him and his dad get a lot of father sons and mother daughters, but very quiet. And we had a fun day on the river. He caught three muskies. We had just And he was just gradually throughout the day just opening up. They got back home. Lived down by Oconomowoc, and they got back home. And his dad called me and was like, "John, I don't know what happened, but he's like a different kid. Like he's totally just starting to plan. He maybe wants to go to Stevens Point. He wants to do resources and everything." And then he was like, "Thanks a lot for the trip. Okay, that was it." Well, just this past summer, I got a call from him, from his dad. And he's like, "John, Ben's getting out of the Marine Corps. He's put 4 years in. His first thing he said is, I want to go on a fishing trip up north. You know, call John." And I was like, that was cool. Well, he came up, we had just an absolute blast. You know, that kind of stuff makes it just worth it.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm sure, like, that different experience being offered doesn't take long for people to, you know, word of mouth becomes your sales.
That's pretty much all it is word of mouth. And, you know, we're not looking to, you know, we're retired, you know, so we're not looking to make a living at this. In fact, most of it just covers the cost of having all the gear.
Yeah, we travel somewhere and hire a guide. It pays for that or our gear, right?
That's about it.
But yeah, we could guide every day if we wanted to.
But then we wouldn't be able to go fishing
calls,
ever. So.
Lots of calls. But it's, so it doesn't take long for people to realize that we take everybody. You know, you don't care. You know, we have fun, you know, with elderly people too who used to do it 20 years ago, and now you get them in a canoe. You know, give them a comfortable seat, and they're like, "Hey, I think we can do this." And they just have.
Oh yeah, that one gal that was like 80, and she just scrambled up in front of the canoe.
Yeah, and
back on the water.
Yeah, so yeah. that's rewarding. And when you're an educator, that's what your career is. All those teaching moments.
And coaching.
Brenda's has her master naturalist certification. So you know, there's lots. So, you know, we do a lot of foraging too along the way, and there's always things that you know. So,
So one of the obvious, this story is focused on walleye, but it's also the people that surround that. So, muskie is a big thing, but walleye is another big species, right?
Everybody wants to catch walleyes because I mean they're the most finest table fare we have in Wisconsin, right? They're just amazing to eat, and so a lot of people want to catch walleyes. And we found a little niche for that.
Yeah. Walleyes, I think it's funny. I said they're a very, I don't know what the waiter said, like an intentional fish. Like people want to catch walleyes. And you just don't stumble across them like in lake. You might stumble across other fish when you're fishing for walleyes, but you don't just all of a sudden stumble into a bunch of walleyes. You know, it's usually kind
targeted.
Of the focus. But we get a lot of calls from people. They say, "Hey, we're coming up. You know, maybe from who knows, Chicago or wherever. We're coming up for a week. We want to get a bunch of walleyes in the freezer." It's like certain times a year
you can do that
in Wisconsin. And the guys that guide strictly walleyes up here, and they're good. And those guys know. This isn't northern Minnesota or even, you know, or Canada. There's good, great walleye fishing at times in certain areas. But it's, you know, Green Bay is obviously really good. Chequamegon Bay is good. And we do fish there too. But
you kind of have to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Or have a guide that knows what they're doing because
it's a harder
fish to catch.
But the idea of just coming up and loading up on walleyes in northern Wisconsin, it's challenging for species coming up in July and August for their 1 week vacation, right? So,
but people have that mentality.
And they do.
And their expectation is
northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Walleye everywhere.
They do. And it is challenging. Again, you know, you especially there's a really good lake by us that it's a very, very good walleye lake. But from about early July through August, it's solid weeds. And it's shallow and it's solid weeds. And there's lots of walleyes in there and big walleyes. But most people are like, how do you even begin to fish them here? Like, you know, and it's frustrating because people aren't used to fishing in the thick weeds for walleyes. But they're in there and you can get them if you know, but it's totally a learning curve. Yeah. So
talk to me a little bit about the river experience, because you know, one thing that a lot of people probably don't realize is walleye are native to rivers. Mm-hmm. Like lakes are where you think of them, but that's actually not their native habitat. So how do you stumble into knowing where the walleyes are in these little backwoods
rivers? That's kind of funny, because we actually at first didn't really ever target them or catch them much.
No, I mean, I grew up fishing the rivers around Eau Claire for walleyes, but it was mainly in the spring, you know, spring walleye fishing in the rivers, you know, it was good. And that's kind of the cool thing about when you're fishing these small rivers, right?
Yeah.
Like we said, deep water holds most of the fish, and deep water on these rivers is literally 3 or 4 feet. So, I mean, you're talking about a deep little hole that might get up to your chest if you walked in it, but everything else is this deep. There's fish in there, and it's going to have muskies in it, and there's going to be smallmouth in it, and there's going to be walleyes in it. And it's funny, in the summer, in the spring, we can go and hit those holes, and there's rivers high, and the walleye, the water temp's good, and there's a lot of feed in the water, and it's spring, so they're feeding, and we can catch a bunch. I mean, you can, you know, never see another boat the entire day, and you're catching and some really nice ones too. But then you get into summer, and all these other fish are really actively feeding. You know, smallmouth in August, they're eating everything. So those walleyes are in the same holes a lot of times. So it's like you make that cast, and oh, got a smallmouth. And they're there, and all of a sudden, at maybe four or five fish in, all of a sudden, oh, it's a walleye. You know, and it's a nice 17-inch walleye, perfect eater, you know, and it's like, but they aren't super aggressive. And so, and then you're also, you don't get them in the bite windows. If they want to eat morning and early and late, well, if you're floating a river and there's a really good walleye hole, but you got a 3-hour float out, how are you going to hit that right before dark? If you're trying to float out in the dark or right at first light, how are you going to get down to it in the dark? So sometimes we have to camp, you know, we'll make camp. Yeah. So we hit it in the evening, hit it in the morning, you know. But you can usually pick one or two up in the afternoons, you know, and we have dark water here too, so that helps. These rivers are pretty dark. So, you know, you find a little cloud cover and dark, deeper hole, and you can usually find them. So
growing up, you said you fished for walleye, and you were over by Green Bay, so was walleye a big thing for you as well?
No, it's interesting, because back when I was young, which is a long time ago, the walleye fishing wasn't a thing on the bay. You know, I'm back where the Fox River was almost a dead river when it was polluted really bad in the 60s, and so our main fish that we fished for was perch, which is a sister to a walleye, right? So I grew up perch fishing a lot, which there's a lot of similarities when you're fishing them, but we'd go out and catch 200 perch, and that was just a normal thing. But not walleyes. That was not a thing back then.
Mm-hmm. So when you started coming up here, is that really the first time that you got into walleye?
Oh, yeah. It was like, I didn't realize how much there was to it. You know, I didn't know that it was kind of this cult following of people that want to catch walleyes, and that was like the night we got
lighted
up.
Lighted bobbers.
Yeah, I'd never fished with a lighted bobber, and he took me up north in a lake not far, an hour from here, and we went out at midnight at the boat landing and launched the boat, and we got these lights on our bobbers, and I'm watching the light go down slow with this bobber, and I was just fascinated by it because I'd never done anything like that, and I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And then we got to eat them, which was really awesome.
So for you, was walleye just part of what you were looking for, or was like walleye the species?
Certain times of the year, I'd focus on walleyes on the river, especially.
Or when you're ice fishing.
Or ice fishing. I did a lot. I always said I probably got through college because of walleyes. I said I would drive my car. I went to Stout in Menominee, and I would, one of the lakes where I lived, and I'd drive my car out there at night. I'd set up my 3 lighted tip-ups, and I'd turn on, leave the car run, turn on my dome, I do all my reading, oh, got a flag, go out there, catch one. And I could do 3 or 4 hours of that. You're not going to find me 3 or 4 hours in a library doing that. But I could do that sitting in a car by myself, you know. And so I had some good friends. We were kind of walleye. We chased walleyes through the ice. And, you know, that was pretty good focus there. And you know, I think, too, now with all the electronics that are available to people for the lakes, you know, you can find them when you used to not really be able to find them, right? I mean, you can find them suspended in 40 feet of water. You know, how did you used to find those fish, right? You didn't really. Most people didn't. Mm-hmm. But in the rivers, it really hasn't changed. I mean, walleye fishing is very much what it was like when I was a kid and when I was growing up, and very simple. You know, you could put a bait in front of them. And when you're talking about a hole the size of this table and, you know, bait it, they're going to eat it most likely. So,
and that's something we really appreciate, is the lack of electronics.
Simplicity.
What we do, the simplicity, like even with that, the one walleye we have mounted, I caught it. I was just floating in a canoe and dragging a bait behind me, and in the middle of nowhere, and it hit, and I caught it. And that's, there's just something. Oh, it's special when you do it that way. It's like
it's very primitive's not the right word, I suppose, but it's just very it's very simple. You know, there's no, you just read the water and they've got to be somewhere in the water this time of year when it gets low. You know, really concentrates and it's getting to those places is very difficult.
And during the year, there's certain things like right now, you know, wherever the wood is in the water, they're in that shadow down there in that shallow water they want to hide, you know. You just kind of
get out of the sun. You know, yeah. We got a few places where there's big logs that if you can get it in there without getting hung up, you're usually almost always going to catch one. Yeah. So,
is the, I mean, obviously bass are known for fighting and northern are a little different and musky will take your lure, but what's it like to catch a walleye? What's that experience like? I mean, can you tell?
The ones on the river are very different than the ones in the lake.
I mean, they just fight like crazy. Yeah. They don't want to leave that hole. You know, they do not want to come out of there. And when you're catching, we get some walleyes in the mid to upper 20 inch range. We got 230 inches on the river in the last couple of years. But you get those 5 pound fish and they don't want to come out of that hole. And we're using light gear, you know, like we usually, it's pretty intense. Yeah, it's fun. And you're in a small boat, you know, everything is kind of like a circus when you get a big fish on a small boat. It's just kind of chaotic, but that's what people remember, you know. And so they fight.
Yeah, they definitely fight. And that's just some of the fun of it, right?
Yep.
I mean, when you think of like people that are out in Winnebago just trolling, they're just going back and forth for 6 hours and like fish is on, they just hold them in that. I mean, is there any comparison between the two?
We have a bigger boat and we'll go up to Schwamigan Bay and we'll troll. We'll do some trolling. I enjoy some of that.
You like trolling a lot. I'm not so.
I mean, it doesn't compare to fishing them in the canoe or on the rivers, but I enjoy it. But exactly, a lot of times I kind of call that a little bit of a meat hunt. I mean, you're going to go out and you're going to reel in a 16, 17 incher and it's going to go in, you know, or even a 20 incher. It's not a lot of, it's fun because you're catching a walleye, you know, kind of in the middle of, you know, a big body of water. And that's kind of, them out is fun.
That's where we try and get most of our fish to eat is fishing that way. Because on the river, these are small rivers. We try and be pretty careful about keeping anything because, you know, we just don't know. You don't want to affect the population. So every now and then, if something's hooked bad or we want to do a
We'll keep a couple. We have clients that are like, you know, are we ever going to catch a walleye? We're like, yeah, you can keep one.
But if we catch four or five, they keep one or two.
Enough for a meal for them, and that's good, you know. Yeah. But and they're good with that. So,
well, how did you get involved with Women Fish?
Wisconsin Women Fish?
Yeah.
At a bar, don't you get involved with everything at a bar? Sorry to say, Northern Wisconsin. Yeah. We were at a bar for the Muskie School. Mm-hmm. So my friend Amanda owns a Deerfoot down at on the Chippewa Flowage, and we were down there, and I was working at that school, and Barb Carey, the president of Wisconsin Women Fish, was there, and we were talking, and she started talking about going ice fishing up on Red Lake, and they stay in sleeper shacks. And all these things went off my head. Sleeper shack? You get to fish while you're sleeping? It just sounded like the coolest thing ever. And I said that to her, and she's like, you got to come with us. And all of a sudden, I was riding up to Red Lake with a lady I didn't know to sleep in a shack with people I didn't know and fish walleyes, and it was 28 below. And that was my introduction to the club, and it was awesome. The people are great, and I had a blast. And
That's been a really nice niche for us too. A lot of women that want to come up here, learn to musky fish, or you know, again, we float rivers and we fish with light gear. You know, we don't throw big heavy stuff. They feel really comfortable having Brenda take them.
And sometimes they just want a woman to take them.
And then sometimes after they come for a year, then of course their husband back home is like, hey, I want to go. So then I'll take the husband, she takes it, and it actually ends up working out really good. We do that quite a bit. She'll take mother, daughter, I'll take father, son, and it ends up, you know, being a really good
day. The more I got involved with Wisconsin Women Fish, the more I started guiding too. In the beginning, I was more like just a support system. And now I take a lot of people by myself, and I even get requested sometimes over my husband.
Oh,
and I'll say,
sometimes.
If you really want to catch a fish, go with him. If you want,
especially in the fall, October, she guides a lot in October. Yeah. We have dogs and I bird hunt a lot, and I kind of back off the first week or two. I have some trips booked, but other than that, then I kind of back out. But she goes pretty hard all through the whole month. So,
Well, in that, I mean, this having covered this around the state, this is a pretty male-dominated, you know, masculine sphere. So, what is it like to let women know, hey, there's a comfortable space for you to learn how to do this?
Yeah, that's what the club that I belong to is all about, really, is giving people a chance to do it without feeling that pressure. And we have a lot of women too who used to fish with their husband, and their husband maybe passed away or they got divorced, and they're like, I still want to do this. How do I do it on my own? And so we're a big support system. We have like a private Facebook page where you can ask questions, and only the people in the club can see it, so you don't have to be afraid someone's going to jump in and start saying stupid stuff and making you feel bad. So that's cool. And for me, when I take someone, I have a kind of a different approach than John. He teaches a lot about fishing and gives a lot of direction. And I'll often have people that are a little bit more trepidatious about what we're doing, and I'll say, you know, we're going to go fishing and we're going to have some fun. And if you want guidance or you want me to tell you things, please do so. If you'd rather have me be quiet and just paddle you along and you want to just cast a little bit. And so I try and approach it that way so it's not so intense. And a lot of people appreciate that. And then by the end, they're like, should I cast that spot? How about that spot? You know, and they're just all into it. But it's more of a slow, slow roll.
Imagine that. As you give women space, they're very comfortable to take that space. It's
right.
Letting them feel like they can take some of that space.
Exactly. And I'm a pretty non-threatening kind of person. And sometimes people look at me and they're like, you're going to roll the river for the next 8 hours? And I'm like, yeah, I am.
Well, and it's funny because you either light that fire in someone who's never done it and they just are like, this is a, or you relight the fire in someone who used to do it when they were a kid and they just don't really know why they got away from it, and they did, and then all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, this is...
Well, I have a gal who's coming back this year. Last year she came to Muskie School from California. Her kids encouraged her to come back because she used to come up here and do stuff, and she read about our Muskie School and she came, and I had her out on the river and I gave her a rod, and she's like, she made like 3 casts. She's like, I can't do this. And I was like, well, you know what? Let's just set you up with a sucker, because in the fall we put suckers on a sucker rig with a bobber and whatever. And I said, you can just hold the rod. So, you know, make it work for her comfort zone. I wasn't going to keep pounding on her on how to cast. It's like, no, let's just do this. And isn't she sitting there and she's just holding this rod, and all of a sudden this big muskie comes screaming in, grabs a sucker, runs into my little cargo canoe, splashes her with water. She screams bloody murder. Pretty soon we got that fish flying all around. We end up catching it. It's a 40-inch muskie, and she gets a picture with it. And it was just such a cool thing. And her family was so happy to hear all about it. And it was just, and now she's coming back this year. So we're going to hopefully do it again. But, you know, those...
Set a high bar.
Yeah, that's a little nerve-wracking. Yeah. I get a little nervous about all of it. I feel a lot of responsibility to help people have a good time and meet their goals or make their dreams come true. And if I don't, then that's hard for me personally.
And kind of getting back to what you asked before, people's expectations. One of the things that is hard, too, is because we float these rivers where, you know, these are small. You go down the middle of it, you know, you can cast to both banks. I mean, this is not like, you can't get anything much more than a canoe on a lot of these stretches. And trying to understand that, well, what is a trophy or what is a success in that river? You know, because social media, you mentioned, you know, Green Bay, you see all these pictures of people, these giant walleyes, you know, multiple and stringing and laying on the bottom of the boat, you know, and it's like, well, that's not really what we're going to do. I mean, we have some really good days where we catch a lot of fish, but with walleyes, if you go through, you catch some smallmouth, maybe a muskie, and on your light gear, and then pick up a couple of nice walleyes, you know, for the frying pan, that's pretty cool. And think about that into context. It's always important to... So some people are really focused on numbers, numbers, numbers. And after the end of the day, they're like, that was really fun. Like, because it was just... like simple.
With my big, well, I mean, to me, that was more of a trophy than, I've caught bigger ones when I was out trolling with you on the big water, but that one was more special just because of how it was caught. You know, to me, you know, it was just.
Yeah. We had one, I had two guys, they're really diehard musky fishermen. They fish everywhere. And they won a trip that we had donated to a local organization. And one guy was from Chicago, they're both from Chicago, actually. And these guys knew more about musky fishing than I did. I mean, they were really good. So I picked their brains. It's one thing, we don't have any ego, so we're always, literally, we're always asking. When we get people in a boat that we know, no sir, we're always picking their brains. But they were like, what should we bring for gear and what are we going to use? And I told them, I said, here's the thing, guys. We use medium heavy bait casting gear if you want to catch muskies. I said, we don't bring any musky rods, no big ones, no big baits. I said, fish in the river, eat the same stuff as the bass. I said, so we'll catch bass along the way, but I said, this is what these muskies eat. Well, we're in this super small river. I mean, where it starts, it widens up, but it's small. And he had on a spinnerbait, and he cast a spinnerbait down in this little hole, and also he's like, oh, there's one. He's like, oh man, it's good. And it was one of these giant walleyes. It was a 30-incher, dark gold water, it's like dark gold. He was literally like, this is one of the coolest fish I've ever caught. He was so appreciative of it. And so, you know, and that was probably a 20-year-old fish. I mean, it was just awesome, awesome experience for him. And, you know, we released it and let it go. And, you know, that he wouldn't have got that with a, you know, a 40-inch muskie. Because for him, that's a nice muskie in the river. And for him, that would have been like, oh, yeah, you know. But that was pretty cool.
So one of the other things I want to explore a little bit is relationships and couples in fishing. We've ran into some people that they can't really have a relationship because they're almost married to the boat. And then there's other people where they, you know, maybe the spouse will come along and they'll read and they'll find a way to be together.
Sure.
And then there's people like you where obviously your passion dovetails together. But how important is, you know, finding a way to balance a relationship with fishing?
We've come full circle, haven't we?
Well, what's really fun, just a quick example that a lot of my friends, when I tell them I got a new reel or I bought some new, they'll say, did you tell your wife? If they're my friends, they know they're joking, right? But like clients, like, oh, I had to hide that. I'm like, oh man, I said, between her and I, we got to rein each other in because it's like, yeah. We just, you know, we support each other all the time. But yeah, we don't have to hide what we buy when it comes to fishing gear.
No.
Yeah.
And fishing together is a special treat because a lot of times we're taking other people fishing. So when we get to go fishing, we usually run away up to Canada to our canoe country. And like we did that this spring, and we just had an amazing time because we could just fish for what we wanted to fish, when we wanted to fish, where we wanted to fish. It's so natural for us.
Well, and I think too, when we first met, I had been fishing tournaments for bass. And I was a pretty competitive guy. We were both athletes and stuff, so we were pretty competitive. And I was pretty competitive about fishing. I was pretty intense. And she was kind of like, lighten up. Like, what's the, you know, geez, you know, whatever. And I knew, though, that, like, because of how competitive she can be, that over time, she has become a lot more like, oh, no, we gotta go work that section because I know that fish is there and I know, you know, so she's...
The more I've learned, yeah, the more input, yeah, I've had, which is, yeah, sometimes
and
not
I just
always
roll,
easy.
I roll around, yeah, and she just sometimes works it.
So. I remember the first time we competed fishing, though, for perch on the bay.
No, I don't... I've completely locked that out of my mind. I had floating jig head, slip bobber. I had all these rigs... And we're out in 30 feet of water. She had a paint stick with line wrapped on it, and she dropped it straight down with a spring on the bottom and two hooks coming off. And I was just like, got one. She had 9 in the boat before I even had a bite. I'm just like, this is just way too embarrassing. But you know.
So there's lots of different ways to fish.
There is,
for sure.
Yep.
But
yeah, we work it out.
And even, like, you know, he likes to troll a lot. And it's not my favorite, but I go trolling with him, and I've learned more about it, and so I can participate more, which makes it more interesting than it used to be. I used to just sit there, like if you go out with a charter, and you just sit in the boat and wait and wait and wait for a rod to go off. Now at least I'm, what bait should we put on? How many feet back? And, you know, So it gives you a lot more to think about. Mm-hmm. So,
well, what would you recommend to couples that, anyway, marriage therapy type thing of like, well, one of the partners is passionate and...
Well, kind of like we do with our clients a lot of times, ask what kind of fishing do you really like to do? Find out what each person really loves to do and find that happy medium, because same thing, I mean, I have clients that they love to fish slow with jigs. They don't really want to cast topwater, and other people, that's all they want to do. And it's like, you, if you can tailor your experience, if somebody doesn't like to sit and look at a bobber and then you make them sit and look at a bobber the whole day, they hate that, right? So that's one thing.
Well, a lot of times the guys that want to go up and troll on Schwamigan Bay, John just takes them, and I don't go along on that. Mm-hmm. And if I have girls that really want to sit and jig for crappies and bluegills, you know, I'll do that. Or like with my club, I'll go on some outings that, you know, I really enjoy. And then
the other piece is don't torch them, right? Once you have one of these days, and, you know, even if it's a good day, don't overdo it. When it's time to be done. And just then go get a good dinner or something . Just make it, because, man, that's how... You know, you just can really burn people out in a hurry. That extra hour or 2 hours in the boat or on the ice or whatever, it just...
I burned you out on that a little bit on ice fishing. I have a hard time getting off the ice.
No, she doesn't ever want to stop. So that might cause us more... As a guy fishing, I can't believe I could complain about my wife not wanting to come off the water. But sometimes it's like, no, hon, we really do have to go. So,
yeah.
But no,
I'm very competitive with myself. I'm not competitive so much with other people. But if I have a goal, and we do that in our club, you know, you want to catch a fish a certain size, it's like, I really want to make that happen, and I work really hard at it.
I've kind of transitioned a little bit, too. I don't really care if I fish a whole lot now. I love rowing people. I love taking people down the river, and just I don't fish that much really anymore.
And it's funny, because every now and then I'll say to him, I'll say, but I really want to, because I said, I didn't have all those years of fishing like you did. Because most of the time, I mean, I had three kids and I taught full time. I didn't go fishing when I was young. And so
I
now
had three
it's
kids
like,
too, but I still did a little fishing.
Yeah, you did a little bit more than me. Yeah, I was inside making dinner and you were standing out in the bay casting.
Yeah.
And I don't have any problem with that, but now it's like, I want to have my time, and I don't want to, you know, there's a lot of times when I want to fish too. Sometimes it's even hard for me when I'm guiding. It's like, I'm guiding and I'm like, I want to just cast over there because I know there's a fish and they can't make that cast, and I want to just see if there's a fish there. So I still have all that going on in my mind. I don't think you have that so much anymore.
Well, that's a funny thing too up here. There's a number of guides, especially musky guides, that they fish right along with their clients. And I always ask a lot of the clients that I have that they travel all over the world and hire guides, you know, and I'll say, how many times do you come into where the guide is fishing right alongside you? They're like, not many. They're like, that's a little different up here. It's like, there's some a number of guides that they'll fish right along with the, you know.
Yeah.
And to me, I've had it happen a number of times where I literally... I want to make a cast to see if this line is on right, or I want to see if there's action on this bait, and I'll make a cast like this, and I'm like, I feel so bad, like I hook a fish, and you know they hadn't been catching them, and it's like, oh, you know, but no, we typically don't fish.
No, I will with friends. Yeah. You know, I'll have some friends that they'll be like, no, you got to fish with us, and then twist my arm.
Well, you guys can fish with us tomorrow.
Oh,
I'd be happy to have.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
So in terms of like the culture of walleye, I mean, the history is there, that legacy, but is that still as ingrained, or is that kind of a generational difference, like the older people's view of walleye versus maybe some younger people?
That's a really good question, because again, up here, we're in a little bit of a throwback area right here. I think a lot of people still really like, you know, we have multiple generations of people that come up
here
to these old resorts, these old lakes. They fish the same spots that they did 40, 50 years ago. And the walleye still has kind of this mystique. I mean, that's the first thing you ask people about when they're fishing, you know, tends to come up right away is, you know, you get any walleyes? I mean, that's pretty, you know, and obviously the muskie has a whole different following, but usually no, in conversations with people talking about muskies. You know, it's just walleyes are still, there aren't many people up here that talk about like, oh no, I'm not interested in walleyes. Oh, most people, they want to go catch a few walleyes.
Yeah.
So.
When you think of the amount of research that's being done by, I mean, UW Stevens Point and the tribes and the DNR and all the other agencies, Glyphlic, and a lot of it focused on walleye, is that worth it from a statewide perspective? What is the bigger, broader value to all that effort being put into to walleye, that one species?
Well, I think, I mean, we're big proponents of science and all the data and research that shows that a lot of lakes are struggling, a lot of populations are, and that would be really, really a shame.
It would be a huge loss for the Northwoods culture, because the walleye is sort of king of the fishing.
And even the Chippewa flowage, you know, this legendary body of water, I mean, it's a phenomenal fishery. No walleye fishing in the winter. You can't catch them through the ice. And it's all people talk about. Like, why can't we? Why does it, you know? So as soon as you took it away, you hear from the people like, that's ridiculous. But it also needs to be protected because, you know, we've said it a million times, but with the equipment today, especially through the ice, the equipment, everything from keeping people warm and transportation and shelters, and then obviously the electronics, the gear, You can really
decimate a population.
Yeah, I mean, you could do a number.
We're very careful about little lakes that we go to, especially with ice fishing, keeping them sort of under wraps. And there's only certain people we will take to them that we know are responsible fishermen. They're going to put them back because you could just really wipe it out.
And then you add social media to the mix, right? And you know, it ends up being a potential, you know, crappies. We talked about crappies a little bit earlier. I mean, crappies, I mean, that has to stay on people's radars, because in the winter, towards the end of the winter, all those crappies congregate in that, you know, in that deeper water, and in some lakes only have one deep spot. And pretty soon there's a shack, there's another shack, there's another shack. And pretty soon they're hammering them day after day.
Yeah.
You know, they got to watch
that. So education is super important, and I think having the science behind it, you know, just makes it all work together then.
It's interesting that I've talked to a number of people that are very focused on like putting walleye back in the lake, whether they're walleyes for tomorrow in the little mobile hatcheries, or they, you know, they're guides, or they're constant fishermen. A lot of those people are talking about, you know, catch and release being their primary thing. Like, it's the thrill of the catch; it's not the harvest. Or, you know, they'll do a fish fry, but that's not their priority.
Yeah.
So who are, is like, they're a different breed of person that is just about the harvest. Because it seems like there's almost a bifurcation among walleye fishermen of those that are just the pursuit, and then it's the table.
Yeah, there's a hunting factor to walleyes, like figuring out how to get them and how to get them in the boat. It takes a lot, and so you take pride in figuring that out and finding them.
Let's save that question. Sorry, can I cut for 1 second? What's going on? Are you going to be able to edit that out?
I can barely hear them. Would they be quiet if they were inside or not?
Can we
stop for just a second?
Okay. Hold on. You're tethered.
I know.
Really, I'm all so we need.